This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Millions of kids these days are reading the hit series Diary of a Wimpy Kid. They're following the middle school adventures of Greg Heffley, the self-centered, prank-playing, highly imperfect brainchild of author-illustrator Jeff Kinney. It's a super popular mix of text and cartoon, delivering just what we're told child readers want these days, warts and all realism tailored to their web-savvy, highly visual tastes. It's a far cry from Wind in the Willows, this hour on Point, the long arc of children's literature, and a conversation with Jeff Kinney, author of Diary of a Wimpy Kid. You can join the conversation. Are his books on your shelves? Did Jeff Kinney's series get your non-reader reading? Do you laugh along? What do you make of the direction of children's books these days? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Vancouver, Canada today is Jeff Kinney, author and illustrator of the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series and executive producer of the films based on the books. The Diary of a Wimpy Kid series has sold 40 million books since it launched in 2007. Book 6 is coming this fall. First printing, 6 million copies. Time magazine named Kinney one of the 100 most influential people in 2009. His essay in Time's July 18th issue is Kid Lit Unbound. Jeff Kinney, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Book 6, is he still got his bad attitude, your young anti-hero?
Actually, I wouldn't say that Greg does have a bad attitude. In the intro, you said that he was vindictive, mean, and lazy, and I think lazy is right on. But vindictive and mean, I don't know about that. I think that Greg is imperfect. He's really a flawed protagonist, and most of the humor in the books comes from the reader's recognition of Greg's flawed point of view. But I think that he's really a full person. He's just a kid who's learning to grow up, who's caught in the camera's glare at the wrong time. As far as book six goes, yeah, he actually learns his lesson in book six, because I thought that would be fun to do in something really, really different for this character.
Learns his lesson? What? He's no longer like spewing out moron, jerk, dork, and all the rest? Or learns what lesson?
Greg actually does the right thing, which was something that was really fun to do as an author. I try to make Greg as authentic as possible, and he's a lot like I was as a kid, you know, kind of a little bit self-centered and you know, lazy at times and a little bit scheming. But I think that, you know, I also had a lot of goodness in me. And when I was a kid, I did the right thing occasionally. And so I thought that would be really fun in this next book to explore that.
You're writing in Time magazine in the last few days about Kid Lit Unbound is the headline there. And you say children and adults have a difference of opinion when it comes to what constitutes legitimate reading. Like what?
Well, I think it was fun. I went to a librarian's conference a few years ago, and the librarian who was speaking, she was very progressive, and she said, you know, what we're handing our kids are Wind in the Willows and Anne of Green Gables, Little Women, those kinds of books, and they want to read pop-up books about sharks. you know, kids don't discern what is legitimate reading in the same way that adults do. But I think it's really important that kids' first experience with reading is a good one. You know, if you put Wind in the Willows in the hands of a kid and say, well, this is reading, then a kid is going to say, well, then I must not like reading. You know, so I think it's important to give kids these kind of gateway selections so that they are ready and they're sophisticated enough in their sensibilities when the classics come along.
The gateway selection, the gateway
drug of Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Could you, you know, we'll have people who know this so well, who see their kids read it, who adults who read it themselves and laugh. You write that you originally, you say, wrote it for adults. But I wish you'd read just a little bit for us, if you would, Jeff, from one of your Wimpy Kid books here, just to get a flavor for folks who may not know. And as Jeff is reading here, you've got a picture, you've got sort of a little more than stick figure, but some very simple but very telling cartoons woven throughout all the text. What have you got for us here, Jeff?
Right. Well, Greg's talking about his first day of middle school, and he's lamenting the fact that he's stuck here. So he says, "I'll be famous one day, but for now, I'm stuck in middle school with a bunch of morons. Let me just say for the record that I think middle school is the dumbest idea ever invented. You got kids like me who haven't hit their growth spurt yet mixed in with these gorillas who need to shave twice a day. And then they wonder why bullying is such a big problem in middle school. If it was up to me, grade levels would be based on height, not age. But then again, I guess I would mean kids like Chirag Gupta would still be in the first grade." And there's a picture of a really small kid, you know, writing on his desk, standing up next to it.
And another sketch of a big bully out of my way runt, sort of smashing kids into lockers in the hallway of what I guess would be a middle school in Greg's
right.
case. You say adults look back on what they read or were given as classics in their childhood and always picture those as the classics that should be the standard for their kids, Jeff.
That's right. I think that, you know, there's been an interesting change in literature, what's accepted as reading these days. When I set out to write Diary of a Wimpy Kid, I started publishing it on the web. And my thought was, well, I'm going to put up this first page. And it was all text. And I said, well, the kid isn't going to turn to the second page, you know, if it's all text. So I better put a cartoon on that page. And then with the next page, I had the same problem and on and on. So I ended up with this 1,300-page manuscript online that was full of cartoons. And I think that really speaks to a kid's visual expectation. Kids have a different literacy visually nowadays, and I tried to anticipate that in my books. You know, I think I have sort of an unfair advantage in some ways, is that a kid can pick my book off the shelves and just turn to any page and get engaged. And I think it would be much harder for me to try to engage kids without my illustrations.
And they have done it by the millions and millions. Of course, children's books for many years, even those that were not exactly illustrated books, have had chapter starts and here and there illustrations woven through to keep them focused. They're an integral part of Jeff Kinney's Diary of a Wimpy Kid. 40 million copies out there. First printing of his next part 6 in the series, 6 million volumes. He joins us from Vancouver, Canada. And Jeff, we've got listeners calling in for you already. Bob in Narragansett, Rhode Island. Bob, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Jeff Kinney.
Hi, Jeff. I wanted to ask you a question. When was a moment that you decided that this type of book was what was going to sell? Because my young son does read it and loves it. And I realize that when I tell them stories at night, it is these type of things when they're irreverent or they don't follow the rules or there's something very exciting happens is what really struck home with my two boys. When was that moment for you?
Well, everything happened to me kind of by accident, actually. I had wanted to be a cartoonist, a newspaper cartoonist, and I couldn't break into that business because what my problem was that I couldn't draw at a professional level. I realized that where I sort of maxed out in my talents was about seventh grade. And that's when I got the idea for Diary of a Wimpy Kid. I said, well, if I start drawing as a seventh grader and I make it look like I'm doing that on purpose, then I might have a shot. And, you know, so I wrote this book for adults. For 8 years I was working on it. I had an adult audience in mind, an adult readership. I thought this book would sit in the humor section. And so then my publisher told me that I had, in fact, written a children's series, which was a shock to me. And it took a few minutes to really adjust to my new reality. But when I thought back on, you know, the pages that I had written, I thought, well, my sensibilities are really very G-rated anyway. You know, I don't think that the books are, you know, harmful in any way. And they're certainly not, you know, there's no real violence or anything like that in my books. And I thought that, you know, that the character Greg was a little bit complicated and wasn't a great role model at times, but that he was funny. So I thought that it would work for kids. However, I thought that the format of the book was so unusual that I didn't have a chance at getting it published. And so everything past the point of publication has been completely surreal to me.
And Bob, how do your children respond to Diary of a Wimpy Kid?
Well, they love it, and I've just recognized that you can't tell them everything can't be perfect and happy and, you know, a perfect ending and a perfect character, and I feel like they really respond to this kid who they really do recognize is imperfect, but is fun, and it does get them reading.
Bob, I appreciate your call. Thanks very much. Jeff, how do you compare, let's say, your Greg with Bart Simpson, who's the sort of the famous TV bad boy at this point? Are they dittos?
I think that that Greg is more of a Larry David, I think, and Bart Simpson is a little, you know, a bit more mischievous, I guess you could say. But I think that the comparison is apt in a way, is that kids, you know, when The Simpsons came out, there was a lot of hand-wringing over, you know, what kind of an influence this would have on kids. But I think that kids have the sophistication to know that, you know, Bart Simpson is funny, but you don't act like Bart Simpson. And in that same way, I think that the kids that I've talked to, they're in on the joke with Greg Heffley. They get that, you know, he's not a perfect character, but they appreciate his point of view and can have a laugh at him.
Do you ever have second thoughts? Do you ever wonder if, yes, all that's true, and still I'm teaching kids to be, you know, pretty rugged little buggers?
You know, sure. I test myself all the time, and I try to make sure I stay in line. I think that the big change for me was when I, you know, at first I was writing for adults and I could wear that hat, and now I know that I'm writing for kids, and it's really a different experience. So I definitely think that I have an obligation to these kids to not go off the rails.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour with Diary of a Wimpy Kid author, Jeff Kinney, and more about books for kids, children's literature, and where it's going, and his best-selling series that gets kids to read with bad behavior and cartoon drawings and all the rest. 40 million in print, 6 million more coming, with his sixth in the series coming out this fall. Jeff Kinney joins us today from Vancouver. Jeff Kinney, stand by. Let's go to Lindsay calling from Peacedale, Rhode Island. Lindsay, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you? This is Lindsay.
Hi. You're on the air, Lindsay. What do you know?
Well, I feel like my kids have loved the book, The Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and I think it's fun, and I've been happy that my kids have enjoyed them and had fun, but I do distinguish these books from more, let's say, I wouldn't say good, but maybe heavier literature or something that has more substance, and I am a big proponent of reading aloud to my children and exposing them to, let's say, for instance, this summer I'm reading to my daughter the book To Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay.
And I just think some of these books deal with some really great issues in a really good way.
How old is your daughter that you're reading To Kill a Mockingbird with, Lindsay?
She's 12 and a half.
And is that in a genre of book that she would also pick up? I mean, if she read Diary of a Wimpy Kid, what other classics did you have her read or try to have her read?
Well, I'm actually a homeschooler, and we have a literature-based program, and my daughter probably reads 25 books a year, and I would say that she has read some. Well, I'm trying to think of.
I mean, are you in that sort of Charlotte's Web and The Wind in the Willows and all that vein?
Yeah, and really love them. And this the Diary of a Wimpy Kid was more of just a fun light read, jokes, and I do feel a little bit like what you've sort of said about the Bart Simpson thing. I don't really want my kids saying dork and, you know, getting exposed to the bullying idea so much. But I think they're fun and light.
Yeah, fun and light. Many parents say they got my kid to read, maybe sometimes boys in particular. Here's a web comment from Phoenix, who's 10 years old, and Sydney, who's 10, and Patrick, who's 8. To you, Jeff Kinney, they say, we have all of your books. They are the best. We are now happy readers. And yet, I know of other parents who say, no, not in my house. This is not what I want to promote. Kelly in Myrtle's Inlet, South Carolina, you're on with Jeff Kinney.
Hi. Oh, I am so excited. I wanted to just speak to the point that these books have been wonderful in allowing my son to stay a little boy a little longer. He is not one of those that's, you know, in this whole Nickelodeon type way of pushing toward adolescence. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of an introvert. And, I mean, he and his friends have just absorbed these books like you wouldn't believe. And it has been such a joy that he's found his own identity.
You mean the Nickelodeon thing is push to grow up too fast? Is that what you mean, Kelly?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if we watch any of the Nickelodeon, I mean, it's not who he is. You know, he's not the cool kid who's always going to be in the band and wants to be the singer, you know? I mean, he likes to play with his Legos and do crazy stuff with his friends. And so these books have just been fabulous. And I thank you so much for writing them.
Thank you.
Hats off to you, Jeff Kinney. And Kelly, thanks for your call. I want to welcome to our conversation right now, if I may, from Albany, New York, Mary Fellows. She's president of the Association for Library Service to Children. It's part of the American Library Association. And she's manager of Youth and Family Services at the Upper Hudson Library System. Mary Fellows, it's great to have you with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So we've got Jeff Kinney. People are picking up his books like hotcakes, millions and millions of them. Parents are saying, you know, this is what gets my child, many of them, to read these days. And yet, if you put these up against, you know, what we put in front of young readers decades ago or less than that, you'd say, holy smokes, what are we doing here? You know, this is not the sort of good little cookie cutter child that we're trying to raise. This is a hellion. What do you see in the arc of children's literature over time, Mary?
Oh, there is such an interesting arc for children's literature. Children's books have always been influenced by and reflected the current society, its standards, its conflicts. So, for example, in 1600s, you have the first books for children, and they were written to frighten children into behaving as parents wished. So you had two choices in the early 1600s. You had cautionary tales, mm-hmm. in which a child misbehaves and dies for their misdeed, or you had exemplary tales.
Okay.
Yep. Exemplary tales in which the child behaves angelically and also often dies so as not to sully, you know, her life later on. So those were the early 1600s, how we train children. Then we move into the Victorian times. It's all about manners and morals, the sanctity of home and parent. Going into the early 1900s, children are still white, obedient, clean. We get to the 1940s. It's still pretty sweet. In the 1950s, children's books have become a business, and the publishers realize that children want to be entertained, mm-hmm. as well as their parents wanting
Not just instructed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we start to see kids making mischief in books. Then the 60s come along. We have the feminist movement. We have a lot of change in society, and we start to see that in books as well. We've got children's books with characters from other races, books about girls who are achieving. We go into the feminist movement in the 70s further, and we have books where we're talking a little more honestly about our bodies, like Judy Blume's Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Mm-hmm.
1980s, more books about children with disabilities. Divorce is more prevalent, so we've got books where the kids are coping with a family where the parents are divorced. And the last 20 years, we look at what's been happening. There's just ever more diversity in the characters and the settings and the situation that kids are dealing with in the books. So it's really fascinating to see in society how first the changes reflected in books for adults, and then after some time, it becomes reflected in the children's books as well.
Jeff Kinney, where did you dip into that arc of children's literature? I mean, Mary lays out centuries there, but just looking at books that would have been around when you were a young guy, I mean, were you reading Wind in the Willows and Charlotte's Web and, I don't know, Treasure Island, Robert Louis Stevenson, or Mad Magazine? I don't know, Jeff.
Well, first of all, I like Mary's assessment that the evolution of children's literature is leading all the way up to Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and now we're at just this, you know, pinnacle
up
moment.
Up or down, I don't know.
Right. But I actually loved, my favorite book was Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing by Judy Blume. I also liked Freckle Juice a whole lot. But on the tip of a sibling, I skipped Are You There, Guy? It's Me, Margaret. So I love those books where I could see characters who were like me. You know, something I like about Greg Heffley on the cover of my book is that he's got a frown on his face. You know, there's a message there that this character is not perfect. And in the title it says Diary of a Wimpy Kid. I guess, you know, there that it's sort of a related in a way that maybe I didn't understand before, to Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing, where Peter Hatcher was, you know, really a put upon kid, like I felt like at times in my life. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, I think that I gravitated to things where the characters felt authentic, and I thought Judy Blume was a master at doing that.
Mary, take us a little further back than Judy Blume. You've got a reading there, I think, for us from McGuffey's Third Eclectic Reader. This goes all the way back to the 1830s and gives a sense of how, you know, this book, among many others, for children, was intended to instruct them in proper, noble, upright way of being.
Mm-hmm. Robert and Henry were going home from school when, on turning a corner, Robert cried out, "A fight! Let us go and see!" "No," said Henry, "let us go quietly home and not meddle with this quarrel. We have nothing to do with it and may get into mischief." "You are a coward and afraid to go," said Robert, and off he ran. Henry went straight home and in the afternoon went to school as usual. But Robert had told all the boys that Henry was a coward, and they laughed at him a great deal. Henry had learned, however, that true courage is shown most in bearing reproach when not deserved, and that he ought to be afraid of nothing but doing wrong.
Now, Mary, do you know, did children voluntarily read that, or did they read it at the end of the teacher's rule in those years? That kind of didactic, here is how you will behave.
Well, keep in mind that they didn't have the choices that kids have today. So if this was the only book or set of books that was meant for children, something is better than nothing.
And Jeff, I mean, when you hear that, you know, I don't know if children grew up to be more upright in 1836 than they do today, but that must be a mind bender for you. I mean, you're writing in such a different direction.
When I hear something like that, it just puts a huge smile on my face because I know that I have more material to work with for my books. You know, I saw a Washington Post article a few years ago, and it said, "Mother-son book club sure to be a hit," and you know, that to me is like manna from from the comic gods.
Because you don't believe it.
No, I love that kind of a thing. It's, you know, the idea that in my books, the mother starts a reading is fun club where she's trying to introduce kids to books like Anne of Green Gables and Little Women and things like that. And, you know, all the boys bring in their books, their selections, and they are, you know, Sudoku books and, you know, video game cheat guides and things like that, because that's their idea of what makes good reading. But what's funny about the selection that Mary read is that you can just feel the presence of an adult, and you can feel that that adult is trying to be manipulative. And I think that kids really pick up on that at a very, very young age. It's why they progress from Barney to something like Phineas and Ferb in the blink of an eye, is because kids know when they're being moralized to. And I think that if you want to be successful as an adult and to moralize a kid, that you need to slip it in. You can't be so heavy-handed.
But Mary, what about the idea, Jeff says moralize, but what about the idea of moral instruction or inspiration? It doesn't have to be as heavy-handed as the McGuffey reader in 1836. But what about that idea? Is that gone? Is that lost today? Does it still matter?
It definitely still matters, but what we're looking at is an array of choices. There are books where we can be inspired. We can read about noble characters who do great deeds and try to identify with those, but we also like to have characters that maybe don't make the wrong choices. And so we read that, we say, I could do better than that. But it's funny because it's the distance between what we think will happen and what actually does happen. And so kids appreciate the humor, as Jeff said earlier, they're in on the joke. They get that they shouldn't aspire to be like Greg, but they think it's funny what he does. I mean, think of our parents. They like the Three Stooges. They laughed at their antics, but they didn't role model on the Three Stooges.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mary, Jeff, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Detroit, Michigan, Leiby Burnham, Rabbi Leiby Burnham. He wrote a pretty tough critique of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, the series, a while back, talking about Greg Heffley, the little the young boy there. He says, not perfect. The kid is totally diabolical. Everything he does is just plain bad. He treats his parents with contempt, his friends as morons, jerks, nerds, and dorks, has no compunctions about stealing stealing, lying, or hurting anyone's feelings and never makes a single good judgment call. He's vindictive, jealous, malicious, lazy, and insensitive. Stop selling our children short, he wrote. Levi Burnham, Rabbi Burnham, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So you hear Jeff and our library representative, Mary, saying, come on, you know, your generation didn't model itself on Three Stooges. These kids won't model themselves, their behavior on Jeff Kinney's young anti-hero. You're not so sure?
Well, I'll tell you, I've worked with children for about 12 years now. I don't know any children as wholly evil as Greg. They're just not realistic. He just does only evil in the book. And that's not a depiction. Everyone talks about the great realism of these books. These are not real books. These are not describing real people. No kid is that bad who's always stealing, making fun, hurting other people's feelings, bullying. There's so much behavior here all the time. I picked up a few of the books and just started reading through them and was shocked. This is not realism. This is hyper evil.
But maybe it's a send-up that lets children chuckle, learn to read, and say they might agree with you. Yeah, he's really a bad guy. Does it really end up shaping children in a bad way, Rabbi Burnham?
Great. That's a great question. Let's talk about learning to read. First of all, I've got a problem. My kids don't like peas, right? My kids don't like eating peas. But we could theoretically create peas made out of sugar, mayonnaise, polysaturated fats, and my kids would probably eat them up, but that doesn't mean that's the peas I want my kids to be reading. On the other hand, mm-hmm. You have people like J.K. Rowling, who's probably the most successful author of our millennium, of our century,
yeah.
And she wrote these books that were also about a wimpy kid who was also picked on and degraded and thrown down the bottom of the steps and all that, but he ended up becoming a hero by choosing right over wrong, and it's not a preachy message, and it's a message that millions of kids picked up all across the world. They read 700-page books, not just a bunch of pages with a few words and a lot of pictures. They really, really lifted up people through that series, and it has amazing success. So I believe that writers can choose to appeal to people's higher morals without being preachy and really get kids to read and get them involved. It may be a little harder work, but I believe it can be done. Or they can just go the easy route and say, let's make fun and do all the things that everyone likes to talk about and are evil, but are not necessarily going to lift our children up.
Hey, Jeff Kinney, what about it? Why didn't you write Harry Potter instead of Wimpy Kid, Jeff?
Is there time for a commercial break? No, I respect Rabbi Burnham's opinion. I think it's a little beyond the pale. I think it's a misrepresentation of my character that he's hurting other people and stealing constantly, and that he's evil. I think that's just much too that just goes too far. But I think that Greg is he's a kid who was a lot like me as a kid. Greg's life is being documented at a really awkward time. I would not like to see myself as a middle school kid because I wasn't great, but I learned from my mistakes and I grew up to become a productive adult. Except for this, I guess, this book.
Except for 40 million copies of this
book. But I have a counterpoint in my book who is Rowley Jefferson, Greg's best friend, who's my favorite character because Rowley he's a pure kid. I mean, I hold Greg up as a kid who is in a rush to grow up, and he makes some bad choices. Like I said, I do not think he's evil or vindictive, but I think that he does have a flawed point of view. But Rowley, he's just a kid who's comfortable in his own skin, and he wants to stay a kid, and that's how I wish that Greg could be, and that's how I wish that I could have been as a kid.
I asked facetiously about Harry Potter, but I mean, could a book like Harry Potter have ever come out of the drafting table of Jeff Kinney? Jeff,
I don't think so. I think I've got my books are humorous, or at least to some people they are, I guess. And I think that they're pretty light, and I think that Harry Potter, I love the character. I think he kind of has a soul of an adult, though, and my character has the soul of a kid.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking today with Diary of a Wimpy Kid author Jeff Kinney. 40 million copies in print and more to come about books for kids, children's literature, and where it's going in his best-selling series that gets kids to read with bad behavior and cartoon drawings, and it's not exactly a role model, but Kids are drawn into reading and learn a lot about life and youth. Anyway, Jeff Kinney joins us today from Vancouver, Canada. We've also got Rabbi Levi Burnham with us from Detroit, Michigan. He wrote a pretty tough critique of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, the series, and he's been sharing a little bit of that with us today. And Mary Fellows is with us from Albany, New York, president of the Association for Library Service to Children. Lots of response online here. Jeff, here's Tim in Narragansett, Rhode Island, says, I'm really glad to hear Jeff Kinney on today's show. My 10-year-old son has every book and re-reads them. Tom says, I love the Wimpy Kids books. Read them with my daughter when she was in third grade. She's now an avid reader. He had two concerns when he read them. I'll put them to you, Jeff. So one, Greg is not a role model, and I discussed with her several times. I guess you agree on that. Kind of a counter model, but something to think about. And then he says, the cheese touch, kind of cooties in your world, has created a lot of havoc in the schools, in her school. I'm sure that a lot of teachers would rather not have to deal with it. Did you bring cooties back, Jeff Kinney?
You know, the cheese touch is sort of like a nuclear strand of cooties. We had cooties in elementary school, but nobody's giving each other cooties in middle school because it's too silly. So the cheese touch was sort of an invention to create a much more sinister version of that particular virus.
Right. And then, Rabbi Burnham, here's one maybe for you from Elizabeth. She writes, Jeff Kinney's books are great and fun and not somehow less than other books that are available. My daughter loves Charlotte's Web and The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and the Diary of a Wimpy Kid books. Quit it with the nostalgia and snobbery and let kids be kids. What do you say, Rabbi Burnham?
Right. So we are letting kids be kids, and the question is just how we make those choices and help influence our children. I think parents today are often taking a back seat in the education of our children and very much have this attitude of let our kids decide everything that they want and make all the choices open for them. But the truth is that the role of parents is that we're supposed to help our children make those proper choices, because children come into the world with very, very limited knowledge of the world, and that's the role of parents, to provide that experience and structure. And I think that's really what we're being called upon in helping our kids with their reading. It is possible to get children to read Charlotte's Web or whatever the other books they are going to be, Harry Potter. It may take a little bit more work, but that's what parents are here for. They're here to put in a little extra work to make sure that my child has good role models, and we should have a role in influencing who our children's role models are. And although Jeff said that his favorite character is Rowley, the clear hero of the book, so to speak, is Greg.
Yeah, Greg's the hero, and he says, you know, when you're a little kid, nobody ever warns you that you've got an expiration date when you're not cute anymore. One day you're hot stuff, and the next day you're a dirt sandwich. Mary Fellows, Rabbi Burnham mentions Charlotte's Web. Just to remember the sound of that, as opposed to, let's say, Wimpy Kid, the Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Could you read a little bit for us, take us into the story just for a moment, and read just a little bit of Charlotte's Web to remind us of that 1952 sound from E.B. White?
Sure. When he recovered from his emotion, Wilbur spoke again. Why did you do all this for me? He asked. I don't deserve it. I've never done anything for you. You have been my friend, replied Charlotte. That in itself is a tremendous thing. I wove my webs for you because I liked you. After all, what's a life anyway? We're born, we live a little while, we die. A spider's life can't help being something of a mess with all this trapping and eating flies. By helping you, perhaps I was trying to lift up my life a trifle. Heaven knows anyone's life can stand a little of that. Well, said Wilbur, I'm no good at making speeches. I haven't got your gift for words. But you have saved me, Charlotte, and I would gladly give my life for you. I really would. I'm sure you would, and I thank you for your generous sentiments.
Charlotte and Wilbur in E.B. White's classic Charlotte's Web. Now, that comes over as very noble, very literate, very sincere compared to what we're reading a lot of now, Mary. Do you see a hierarchy of books? You know, when kids come into the library, are you encouraging parents to eventually get them to that? Or who cares? You know, Wimpy Kid, off you go, read them all, and that's cool.
I think they'll get to that on their own because there are only five, soon to be six, Diaries of a Wimpy Kid. And if a kid enjoys doing something, they'll want to do more of it. So if they're enjoying reading through these books, they'll want to do more reading, and they won't want to reread these 14 times, perhaps, maybe three or four. And so then they will be looking for something else. And that's a parent's opportunity to say, well, let's talk to the librarian and see what the librarian recommends. Or let me tell you about this book that I enjoyed when I was your age. And I thought Lindsay's comment earlier about reading aloud to her daughter, even at 12 and a half, is terrific. Parents still need to be doing that.
Myra in Burlington, Vermont. Thanks so much for calling, Myra. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to say a couple of things. One is that I read to my son from the time he was 6 months, beautiful books, classics, Frog and Toad and Charles Webb and all that. He didn't read till he was nine, and I was horrified that the first thing he read, and he read voraciously all at once, was Captain Underpants. Do you remember those?
I can't say that I do, but I've heard of it.
Okay. So, it was an illustrated book, and it was about two boys who were a bit deviant. They were a couple of troubled kids in school, and but the fact
Captain
is...
Captain Underpants. So what's the moral of the story, Myra?
The moral of the story is the very next thing he went on to read was The Hobbit. And he's been a voracious reader, and I want to say something that for those parents, you know, who might be horrified about the content of these books, or what the rabbi was saying, is that by the time they're hitting, you know, sixth grade, I think it's great for them to read stuff that brings them up, hopefully, up against what I call a moral compass inside themselves, you know, and hopefully parents are still involved and they can ask about what they're reading, what they think.
And do you think they'll figure out a moral compass from the maybe sometimes counterexample of a wimpy kid?
Moral compass is something has to be, you know, provided early on in life. And then you worry a little less about what kids are reading.
But I mean, does Diary of a Wimpy Kid provide it by a counterexample? I mean, that's part of what's being suggested here, is that kids will recognize antisocial behavior
I think just like one of the people on your show was saying that, you know, kids are on, they have BS meters, you know, they're on to, you know, when adults are trying to pull something over their eyes, and I think that, you know, they're on to, like, oh, this guy's really basically acting like a jerk when he's acting like a jerk.
Mary, we've got it. Let me get one more caller right here. Chesapeake, Virginia. David, you're on. Thanks for calling, David.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, it's a very interesting topic. I mean, one part of me, I mean, I agree with the earlier panelists that said, you know, that the books have been written, you know, I guess over, you know, historically, to kind of change with society and what have you. And then, you know, Jeff's book, I mean, it connects with, I think, a lot of parents specifically, as well as kids, because, you know, and I have to disagree with him, I know many kids that act just like that person in the book. And, you know, and then they may not do it around adults directly, but when they're in their own social groups and out in the real world, they act exactly like that. And I think, you know, as the other caller had said previously, I do believe that parents are taking a huge backseat to parenting and parenting their kids. And books like this, I think, even though they're funny and they do connect, they don't really teach or ingrain the real principles and basic skills that kids need to have at an early age in order to be successful in life later on. I mean, they kind of encapsulate the, you know, little things and the technology and the devious parts of things, but they don't really teach those wholehearted basic principles of, you know, of a person that kind of helps build the, you know, creates the building blocks of having strength and functioning well in society. And I think that's, if you look at the books that were written a long time ago and then the ones now, the kids did function better in society a long time ago, and they are very deficient in society now, I think. Now, sure, they're hot on technology and things like that, but they're very deficient in a lot of basic skills.
David, let us pick it up. Jeff Kinney, what do you say to that? The books don't really teach principles you need to be successful later on. And you hear, on the one hand, Myra says, you know, you go, Jeff Kinney, but there's David saying, nah, this isn't what the kids need. It's not the peas Rabbi Burnham talked about.
You know, I would take like I said, I respect everybody's opinion who has a different one than mine, but I would say that You know, I enjoyed Calvin and Hobbes as a kid, and Calvin was, you know, like Greg in many different ways in terms of his planning and scheming and things like that. And it didn't turn me into a rotten person, at least I don't think so. And Dennis Menace didn't create a whole generation of kids who ruined their, you know, neighbors' gardens or anything like that. And I think that, you know, a criticism I read of my book that I liked was that they said that you know, Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer were written by Mark Twain, is that he trusted his readers to figure the characters out for themselves, because I think that it's much more interesting to provide people with a complicated character that inspires discussions with their parents and with their teachers and even their friends than it is to create this falsely pure character who just smacks of manipulation. So I really do, you know, on this program, we've talked so much about how evil or wrong or manipulative Greg is. If you read my books, they are breezy and they're funny. And, you know, Greg's just, he's just at the center of it. But I really take exception to the idea that they're kind of wrecking our society.
Well, they're definitely breezy and funny. Role model, I don't know if anybody put him that way, but they sure grab kids. We've got one calling right now from San Francisco, California. I think we've got Eliza calling. Hi, Eliza. Are you there?
Yes.
Hello, Eliza. How old are you?
I'm 8.
And what do you know about Diary of a Wimpy Kid? Have you read any of it?
Yes, I would like to read the. I just finished the fourth one, and I would like to read the fifth one. It really inspired me to write and read more.
What do you like about Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Eliza?
Well, I think it's really funny, and. I think it's really funny, and
Do you think that Greg Heffley is a good boy, Eliza?
Well, he gets in trouble a lot, but he's funny and.
Sounds like a thumbs up from San Francisco from Eliza. Eliza, I'm so grateful for your call. Rabbi Burnham, there's an 8-year-old. She's read 4 already, and I think it's just this summer she's ready to read the 5th. I mean, that's an 8-year-old way into reading, and it may not be a role model, but you hear our listeners suggesting kids will learn sort of in opposition to the behavior that they see. They'll figure it out.
Well, first of all, I'll tell you, I'm a social worker besides being a rabbi, and most of our studies indicate that people don't learn in opposition to what they see, but actually are constantly being influenced subtly by what they see, what they hear, and what they read. And actually, if you don't mind, you had Mary do a little reading of Charlotte's Web. I'd love to do a little reading of the Wimpy Kid. Would that be okay?
Sure. Let's hear it. What book is it from?
Mercilessly picking on his little Indian classmate named Chirag, and he goes on and defends himself and says the following: "Before you go and say I'm a bad friend for teasing Chirag, let me just say this in my own defense. I'm smaller than about 95% of the kids at my school, so when it comes to finding someone to pick on, my options are pretty limited." Right? So again, as long as we can, there's justification here. It's not so subtle. These are the kind of things that sink into kids' minds. And I'll read just one more. They create this haunted house where they charge 50 cents because they're going to have real sharks, which is, of course, a lie, and they know it, but they're trying to get people. And then they get a whole line of people lining up to come, and they see so many people, they say it's a mistake. Really, they charge $2. They collect $2 from these kids, and then they throw them under a bed and start screaming and yelling until the kid crawls up into the fetal position and starts crying. The father comes and breaks it all up. And here's the moral over here. The good news is, since Rowley's father didn't believe us that we were running a haunted house, he didn't make us refund Shane's money. So at least we cleared $2 today. So these are, and the amazing thing is, you know, I did read the books, and it's almost hard to find any episode where he's not doing something that's evil, lazy, vindictive, hurtful, stealing. I mean, I know Jeff likes to say he's not so evil, but I almost challenge him to show me 4 episodes in that whole entire book where he's not doing something that you would never want your child to be doing. Now, of course, I as a kid did a lot of things wrong, too. I wasn't a perfect child. But I did have role models to look up to. When our role models are positive, there's more hope for us. And I don't buy the whole anti-role model.
Let's hear from the jury of our listeners. Danielle in Columbia, South Carolina. Danielle, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. My son's been sitting here listening to this. He's 10.
Okay, great.
I've called for him, actually.
Okay.
60 times.
Sure.
He loves Diary of a Wimpy Kid. It was what he read at age 8. He has read them, I think, 4 or 5 times. And yet, including reading them out loud to his sister.
Oh, gee, okay.
And yet he's now reading the Hunger Games series.
So is it turning your son into a little bad boy, or is it doing something?
Absolutely not. He's watched the movies. He will say, no, he behaves terribly. But they're funny. And as an adult, I like to read easy, fun stories as well as hard literature.
Danielle, you put your finger right on it. Mary Fellows, where do you see this going? You've described a whole long arc of literature for children over centuries, and we come to this the apogee with Jeff Kinney. Do all these sit on the bookshelves and kids lucky enough to have bookshelves? Do children pick from across the whole range at the library, Mary? Will they get the full range of nutrition that Leiby Burnham's concerned about?
Absolutely, they will. That's what this modern world is about in terms of books. It's about options, and it's about having things that are light and funny and give kids enjoyment, just like with eating. It would be ice cream. With books, maybe it's Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Mary Fellows, you're very generous to be with us this hour, and we're so grateful for it. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Sure.
Mary Fellows, president of the Association for Library Service to Children. Leiby Burnham, Rabbi Burnham, we just got a couple seconds. Last word?
I appreciate you having me out here, and this is the kind of conversations that spur us on to think about how we express ourselves creatively, and I think that's just good to have the conversation. Thank you.
Rabbi Leiby Burnham in Detroit. Jeff Kinney, give us just a 2-word clue as to what's in Book 6 coming up this fall.
Cabin fever. The family's stuck inside over the holidays.
Sounds like all kinds of hijinks coming in Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Jeff Kinney, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.